There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
You want to
keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Fall, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial in the second part of the show. This is podcast number 548, February 2nd, 2012. Steven?
This F1Weekly podcast brought to you by Google Ads. Google Ads give you the stuff that you really want, need, now have to have. Click on them, you know you want to.
Thank you, Steven. On today's program, McLaren's MP427 unveiled and looks sharp. Rubinho loves American hot dogs. Sutil calls Hamilton a coward and a wussy. Of course, we've got the great Motorsports Mondial segment with Nasser Hamid. And I want to remind everybody, we've got a great weekend special, podcast 549. Special interview with, yes, the man himself, Garth Tander. And on this program, we've got an interview with F1 Weekly listener from Australia, Balraj. So, Steve, there you have it. Welcome to the studio. How are you?
Wow, we got an interview with one of the great Super V8s.
Yep.
Wow.
Super V8s, that's this weekend's special podcast, interview podcast, to keep the people happy.
Good job, Nass.
Yeah, well, Nass is a professional, and that's why he takes in the big bucks.
Yeah.
Cool. So, outstanding.
I'm frankly wonderful, Clark, and yourself?
I'm good. And, of course, Adrian Sutil, not so happy.
Well, he's not working, and he's in big trouble with the law.
Well, he's a convicted beater-upper.
Pugilist. Hey, he should go MMA, man. You know, change careers.
But not only that, what I don't understand, he's a pianist. And I thought a pianist protected their hands and didn't get into fights and
you'd
stuff
think.
Like that. You know?
Well, didn't
you
just, like, stab him with a piece of glass or something?
A broken champagne glass, which is... You know, it's almost French-like.
Yeah, it's a little, a broken champagne glass, that's a little weak. You know, get the bottle, huh?
But in the end, I think Sutil should be happy. He was given an 18-month suspended sentence after being found guilty of bodily harm. And, of course, this was against co-owner Team Lotus, or Lotus team co-owner Eric Lux.
Well, that just opens the door for Lux to sue him civilly, though.
Well, they shook hands, and I think in the end, everybody's happy. I'm still a little bit confused on how something in China that happened in a bar is being tried in Germany.
Yeah, unless there's something about...
German citizens misbehaving.
Against other German citizens, I guess.
It's very bizarre, and I'm sure there's a few things I don't understand, but... nevertheless, he got the suspended sentence, which is fine.
No parole either, even.
No parole. He was fined €200,000. And Sutil, who, like you said, does not have a drive, is now left contemplating life. And apparently he's
watching his bank account dip pretty dramatically.
Well, it's gotta be rough, even though he comes from a pretty nice family. The biggest problem is his Boudreaux, his friend. You know, we used to see him holding hands.
Yeah, they're old buddy, you know, old karting buddies.
Holding hands, skipping scotch at the racetracks. And now all of a sudden, when he was counting on his Boudreaux, Lewis Hamilton bailed.
Yeah, especially when Lewis was probably at the bar egging him on.
It's pretty interesting. And Sutil says, quote, "I was not impressed by the lack of support from my friend, and now I'm really bummed out. Lewis is a coward. I do not want to be friends with him anymore. For me, he is not a man. Even his father sent me a text message, wished me luck before the court hearings. Lewis sent nothing, and he even changed his phone number so I can't call him anymore."
Really?
Yeah.
My God. That does make him a coward. Yeah.
Hey, kids in school, huh?
Yeah, this is that. You know, that, frankly, that's pretty bad. If Lewis is his friend, he should
not anymore, Steve.
Exactly. Should have showed up for the court hearing. You know, he was called to testify, said he was going to go, and then backs out in the last week.
I agree, and I'm surprised they didn't summon him and force him to testify, but apparently it was a voluntary thing, and he decided to stay in nice, warm confines of Woking.
Yeah, well, if you were German, he probably would have had to go.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, I'm pretty bummed out about this beautiful relationship.
That torched.
Could have flowered into something beautiful.
Yeah.
And now it's over. Lewis Hamilton.
Now I'll just laugh really hard if Sutil takes Button's place in 3 years and Lewis is still there.
Well, I don't know. Button's looking pretty strong for the next few years. And speaking of Lewis Hamilton and McLaren, they launched the MP427 today. I thought the car looked pretty nice, especially after I saw the Lotus come out, which was surprisingly scary. I'm sorry. I apologize. It's the Caterham.
Caterham.
The Caterham came out last week and was pretty hideous. That step in the nose, it's almost like they just put it together really quickly and they'll fix it later.
Yeah, kind of thing. Oh, crap, we got to get the wing on the front.
Yeah, but no, I thought the McLaren looked great. Pretty nice front wing.
No dimple on the nose?
No dimple on the nose. Nice and clean lines. Of course, this is just the unveiling. The car will change.
And frankly, for all we know, this is even the bodywork they put on the track.
It's very possible. This is all for show, but I admit.
Because you know that in those photographs, they don't want to give anything away.
But my favorite part is everybody's pretty cheerful. And Lewis Hamilton, since he didn't have to go to that trial in Germany, he was pretty chirpy today.
Was he?
Yes. And he was talking about the car. He says, we have a good-looking car. Generally, when you have a good-looking car, it is a good car. The nose dips down a little bit to last year's, and they've changed the mirrors. So hopefully, I'll be able to see better than I did last year. And Felipe Massa should be really happy about that. You know, is that beautiful?
He's a comedian now,
yeah,
dude.
Everybody's a comedian. He hates people. You know, Sutil hates him. So I've got a funny feeling we're going to see Hamilton now becoming chummy with Felipe Massa this season. And they will be holding hands and skipping scotch. So it's fascinating. And Sutil will be left on the sidelines with tears.
Yeah, well, he won't be at the race most of the time, I'm sure.
I know, but his sidelines will be his 50-inch plasma.
Yeah, exactly. With the Sky TV.
Lewis Hamilton goes on to say that of course, there's no more blown diffuser. And he thinks that the back of the McLaren MP427 looks nice and tight and tidy. But still, he says that...
That means there's no downforce.
He also says, it feels strange to say this, but this is my sixth season. And it feels like I was, you know, holding Ron Dennis's hands and eating Jell-O just a couple of weeks ago. So, it's fascinating.
What's he been smoking while he's been away? Holy
I think
cow.
It's fascinating, but there's a lot of good stuff to do. Now, there's a lot of talk at McLaren about Honda Motors, Pure. Are they going to build their own motor? Are they just going to stick with Mercedes for the rest of their existence, which seems unlikely since Mercedes dumped the rest of their shares in McLaren? And at the opening or the unveiling of the MP427, team principal Martin Whitmarsh, of course, had to take some questions on this very subject, Stephen.
Yeah, we've got the issue, too, with the fact with the motor specification changing. Do you stick with who you're with now, or do you just start, you know, kind of from scratch?
Exactly. And do you go with a Honda who have, you know, McLaren has had great success?
Right. And you're talking about the size of the motor that they're going to maybe favors somebody like Honda who has a lot of experience building smaller motors.
Correct. team principal Whit Marsh says, firstly, we've got a great member with Mercedes and probably make the best engine in Formula One. We intend to continue for some years, but ultimately, it's a strange environment. We have no plans in the short term or medium term or long term to manufacture our own engines. This is my favorite part, Steve. Quote, we do not intend to be a facsimile of Ferrari, although we do have great respect for what they do. We have been with Mercedes for 18 years, and it works for both of us. I think it will stay that way for the foreseeable future. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, but Ferrari's really a manufacturer, though they claim not to be.
Well, they sell cars to be in racing.
Right.
I mean, and that's what they've done since the beginning.
Right.
So, I don't see what would be wrong for McLaren to build their own motor.
No, there's nothing with it. You know, frankly, they could, you know, maybe take a look at Ferrari's model and go down that same road and build cars to race. You know, use that to create cash flow to
go racing. Well, I think it would be different from Ferrari. Ferrari has always done that. That's what they do. But McLaren could go into that. They've got the facilities. They certainly have the backing in terms of finance to build their own motor. And I think they have the technical know-how.
Yeah, definitely. They've got enough data over the years to know how to build one.
The biggest problem is when you build your own motor, you don't get free cars anymore.
Or really cheap cars.
Exactly. And, you know, they've been driving around in free Mercedes-Benz for 18 years.
Yeah, it's kind of going to be a step down if they go to Hondas.
Well, they could get that new...
Get the Infinities, I guess.
The NSX. The Infiniti is a Nissan.
I'm sorry. My mistake.
Now you're talking Renault, the Alliance.
I'm sorry. The Acura.
Yes, there you go. Well, in Europe, it's called a Honda. I don't think they have Acuras in Europe. That's an American thing to fool everybody to think that it's more accurate than other cars.
Do they have Infinities in Europe?
Of course. I think they're called Renaults. But anyway, so that's that. And it was nice to actually get some Formula One news with the unveiling of the McLaren. And of course, next week, we're going to be slammed with all the cars coming out, including Ferrari. Ferrari having some trouble over at Fiorino or Northern Italy, per se. It's snowing everywhere.
Oh.
There's lots of snow.
But that car, that red car would look really good on a nice white patch of snow.
No, it would, but they want to do some filming while it's moving. That's called the sneaky test.
Yeah,
where they
exactly.
do it's a commercial, but they're actually testing and gathering data.
Yeah.
Somebody
put a jammer next to the track so they can't collect.
But so we'll see what happens there. But like you said, it could be a great photo op for maybe some big, you know, stud tires.
Yeah, put some studded Pirellis on there.
It should be interesting. Now, the good news for me is how happy Tony Kanaan is because his best buddy, Rubinho, was in Florida. They were kissing and hugging, and Rubinho testing the IndyCar, liking it. It's different, he says, but he was laughing because he's a rookie in IndyCar if he takes the job. Apparently, they would like Rubinho to come to Indy for the 2012 season. He's got a seat if he wants it. They really liked how Tony Kanaan was so chirpy and alive with Rubinho around. And Rubinho thought it was very interesting. He says, quote, I never thought I would come over to this side, America, that is, because I thought I would race 25 years in Formula One and couldn't come this way. I came out of it. I did say that I would never race an Indy car, but what can I do? That's not a big issue. I could run on the road tracks. I could run the Indy 500. There are so many options available, and I'm thankful for the choices at age 39, and I'm still going fast in a car. That's all I could pray for when I was just a kid. We're going back to Brazil, and I'm going to talk to the kids and wife and make a decision whether I want to go roundy-round in America or stay home in Brazil. And probably be a TV announcer. But I think he's going to take it. I think he's going
to
do it.
I could see him. What I expect him would expect him to do is do a very selected group of races.
Absolutely.
Do the road courses. Do the non-ovals, do Indy, and kind of leave it at that. And that way he can split more time with, at home, and he doesn't take the risk. Because the real risk in Indy right now is on the ovals. Because that's where they're going way too fast for the tracks, typically. And you, especially if you get a large field, it's just a little scary.
Absolutely. But I'm sure that the allure of the Indy 500 is there. Because when you go there, you see pictures of Jimmy Clark, Mario Andretti, Juan Pablo Montoya, Jacques Villeneuve.
What about Fittipaldi?
Fittipaldi. I mean, it's just so much stuff. It's
really a who's who of...
Yeah, and the allure is hard to shake.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that Rubinho, because to be honest with you, Indy needs Rubinho more than Rubinho needs Indy.
Yeah, I would agree.
I think he would. It would explode in Brazil. I think the numbers would definitely move up here, especially, well, with the folks in Miami.
Right. Well, you'd also get a lot more of the F1 crowd kind of taking a closer look.
Absolutely.
Right now, because it's been so...
I mean, I watched one truck series race in my entire life, and that's because Kimi Raikkonen was running. Exactly. So, you know, these things do make you curious, and you want to look, see how these people do and those other formulas. So I find it absolutely fascinating, and I certainly hope that Rubens Barrichello will be in an Indy car in America enjoying some kosher hot dogs and some nice mustard.
And who knows, if he is, maybe Nas gets an interview with him at Sears Point.
I'm telling you, I've interviewed Tony Kanaan, pretty approachable. If I can get to Tony Kanaan, we know the king of Karachi. We'll get to two-legged Rubinho pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So, yes, that's all good for the listeners.
Yep.
I love it. Anyway, quickly before we go to break, Nick Heidfeld, he found a job, Stephen.
He's working as an auto mechanic in Stuttgart.
Exactly. he will compete in the 24-hour de Le Mans in 2012.
Didn't he do that last year?
No, he did it in 1999, Stephen. Oh, okay. You're a little off.
Actually, he
went to Formula One in 2000. But he'll be racing for the Swiss team, Rebellion Racing. The team said, quote, Heidfeld, who's 34, will share the Lola Toyota with Nicolas Prost and Neil Johnny at the 80th edition of the Le Mans race. They'll also be doing Sebring 12 hours and, your favorite, Stephen, Spa 6 hours. Which is like...
Spa. I'd love to watch that one.
It's like an hors d'oeuvre of endurance racing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, 6 hours at Spa, it's like 12 hours at Sebring, you know?
Yeah, exactly. He says, I'm really looking forward for the new challenge. I did Le Mans in 1999 and I always knew that I wanted to come back to Le Mans because I love France and its beautiful people. I am very happy to join Rebellion Racing and hope I can help build up their already very impressive achievements. Not cheese, Clark. Yeah. That's achievements. That's fromage.
Exactly, they're fromagements.
Yeah, so I'm getting a little carried away there with the fromage. But anyway, good for Nick Heidfeld. And this is something Adrian Sutil needs to do. And he's a German.
Yeah, he needs to get a ride.
He needs to call Nick.
Yeah, exactly.
Get some strudel going. Watch a little Hogan's Heroes. And drive for Toyota.
Yeah, or get into DTM even.
Yeah, maybe DTM, but you know they're pretty filled up. And, of course, NASCAR is going to have the bad news about Chevrolet pulling out of the BTCC at the very last minute. That was a big bummer. So anyway,
well, they just got MG. So.
Yeah, MG comes in, Chevrolet leaves. Yeah. But they want to focus on their World Touring Car Championship, which I understand they're fighting for to keep their title. So there you have it, Steve. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We've got an outstanding Motorsports Mondial and an interview with F1 Weekly listener from Down Under, Balraj. So we'll be back after this brief message.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king himself, Nasser Hamid.
Greetings and Sing Sing regards. Adrian Sutil on the Bobby Fuller program. Blue Oval dominates the Daytona Oval, and a couple of important signings for friends of F1 Weekly. Bambinos we've known for a few years are moving towards Formula One grid, and these are very good drivers. More on this later. After the Mondial, we have a chat with our dedicated listener in Melbourne, Australia, Mr. Balraj Dhaliwal. Before we get into Mondial, very pleased to report Tuesday evening, 10 p.m., working late for our people, Kelly time, which was 5 p.m. Melbourne, Australia time, we recorded a conversation with one of the top drivers in Australian V8 series, Senior Garth Tender, and hopefully this will be posted by this weekend if our executive director, executive producer, is not suffering from the pre-Super Bowl pneumonia.
That's true. But I think you'll be fine. The Bears aren't playing. I think we'll be okay.
Oh, that's good. We shall start with Sutil versus Lux. George Benson used to sing, "We try to talk it over, but words got in the way." Something that happens between you and me also every now and then. Yeah, every now and then. Well, Adrian Sutil tried to talk it over with Eric Lux, but champagne glass got in the way. And that hurts. What a way to F up your F1 career. Adding insult to injury, he is now calling Lewis Hamilton a coward for not showing up at the trial in Munich. All this over good times and hanging high in Shanghai after Hamilton's victory last year in the Chinese Grand Prix. Lewis and Jerome D'Ambrosio were also at the scene of the crime, and so was Gerard Lopez, according to media reports. I read somewhere that Gerard Lopez was also involved in the scuffle, physical scuffle. Apparently, there is also a video of the incident, but has not yet become a, 2 million hits on YouTube. So let's see what happens there. Sutil, who turned 29 last month, was out of F1 when fellow German Nico Hülkenberg was signed to the Force India's second seat, and then Jules Bianchi took the reserve driver role. So that pretty much cuts him out of for F1. Sutil was second to Hamilton in the 2005 F3 Euro Series. Now, here is the difference. Points, I believe they were teammates at ASM. Lewis, 161. Sutil, 94. Sebastian Vettel finished fifth that year. In 2006, Sutil won the Japanese Formula 3 Championship and reached the pinnacle of motorsports in 2007 and stayed with the same team, which started out as Spyker and then became Vijay Mallya's pet project called Force India. And when I say started out as Spyker, starting out for Sutil, that is. Since Sutil is also a piano man, he can enjoy a long non-racing season playing a tune from Elton John, my favorite Elton John tune. Sorry seems to be the hardest word. It's sad, so sad. One of your favorites?
Yeah, it is one of my favorites.
Your thoughts on Sutil and screwing up is how hard it is to get to Formula One, how hard it is to stay more than a season, and there he is. That's why you don't want to be hanging out with flunkies at an important event where there's a lot of people.
You got to watch your P's and Q's.
Yeah, I's and P's and T's also. So what do you think is going to, when will we see? See, he's 29. So he can go another 10 years in IndyCar, and by the time he hits 40, he can be the young gun in NASCAR.
Well, if he does have some sponsorship money that follows him, he could probably get into some lower formulae somewhere. Perhaps DTM, but it's going to be tough.
He has
he's a convicted felon now.
I wouldn't go that far. I don't know if he is or whatever the German rules are. But anyway, his
manager. Das felon.
Yeah, Das felon. There you go. But his manager, that whom he's had for a long time, I remember once reading an interview, Sutil saying that anything he got in his career, it was arranged through his manager. So he has been good. And this company, which started out as Capri Zone, now it's Capri Sun. And this is a consumer product company, and I think he has enough money where he can buy a pretty decent IndyCar ride, which is what he should do. Because, you know, if you come here, and this is my message to good young drivers like, be it Marco Wittmann or Guido van der Garde or anybody, you know, if you are good, Luca Filippi fits in that. You come here, if you blow away everybody here, I'm not saying they will, but if you do, then you can be like Zanardi. You can get into a top team like Ganassi or Penske. Look at Will Power. I mean, this guy was out of a ride, and thanks to the tax issues of Mr. Castro Dash Neves, he got in, and now he's the machismo at Team Penske. But talking of Jules Bianchi, the young man from Brignoles near Nice and a friend of F1 Weekly since his days of F3 Euro Series, is now the third man at Force India. According to some media reports, he may also race in this year's World Series by Renault, which will be very exciting as he will have 2 years of GP2 experience behind him to take on the young guns like Kevin Magnussen, Kevin Corius, Will Stevens, and possibly Felipe Nasr. You may ask yourself about Alexander Rossi, and this is turning out to be a pretty interesting news issue. A few days ago, ItaliaRacing.net reported, based on Caterham F1 team's website, that he will race in World Series by Renault with Arden. Now, Arden is owned by Christian Horner, and I don't think they have a team in World Series by Renault, but they could have bought a franchise or do a sort of a side deal. Now that they are saying, they mean ItaliaRacing.net, that all that info about Rossi and the young driver program has been removed from their website. So I went on that website. I did not see any link to young driver development. So something is going on there.
Bizarre.
Yeah, but that's motor racing for you. Now we come to Daytona 24 Hours. Great finish to the 50th edition of Daytona 24 Hours. I watched a lot of it. Really enjoyed it. Fantastic. Ford powered cars took the top three positions. AJ Allmendinger, who is from this area, drove the winning car along with Justin Wilson, Oswaldo Negri, and John Pugh. Michael Schenck Racing has two cars in the top three, and this was first victory for Michael Schenck Racing. The winning crew covered 761 laps of racing, and it's a new track record, even though it's not at the Brickyard. The pole-winning car of Starworks team was second, driven by Ryan Dial, the Ronnie Peterson lookalike from Scotland, Lucas Lohr from Deutschland, Uber Alles, Alex Popow, Enzo Portolicchio, and another wee Scot, Alan McNish. And did you see the wheel door banging, trading pain between McNish and Allmendinger?
It was very good.
Yeah, I saw the interview with Alan right after that, and he was not a happy camper. But you know, motor racing, what goes around comes around. Third car was driven by Jorge Gonsalves, Michael McDowell, Gustavo Yacaman, and the 2011 British F3 champion Felipe Nasr. It was good to see him race here. Monty, Franchitti, Scott Dixon, and Jamie McMurray came in fourth in a BMW-powered Riley of Ganassi Racing. Paul Tracy was seventh. The new Corvette DP car is very good looking. I really like the how they've designed this vehicle. You know, these Grand-Am cars used to be very, very ugly. I think even more ugly than uglier than Indy cars of the old. But now they have some very nice looking designs. You know, there's a lot of information coming out off and on that they will have a DTM series in America, and they're trying to work some sort of what they're trying to do is have the same rules for cars because of all this financial meltdown around the world with DTM, Japanese GT Challenge, and Grand Am. So this way, you know, car racing in Germany can race here and, you know, spruce up the field.
Well, that makes sense. Germany sells a lot of cars in America.
Actually, you know, it will be very good because you have now BMW, Audi, and Mercedes, and it will be a very, very good promotion tool for German auto manufacturers. And I was thinking, you know, maybe then we can have a Japanese GT Challenge USA. And this is all good for motorsports. The more competition, better it is. So we'll see what happens. Now we have a Dutch treat. Robin Friens, another of our friends, has been confirmed now at Fortec Motorsports in World Series by Renault. You know, he did tell me this a few weeks ago, but he requested that, you know, keep your mouth, you know, shut. So I said, okay, I will. You know, we always honor requests because if we lose credibility, nobody's going to talk to us. But I'm very happy for him. This is a very good racing driver. We chatted after his announcement, and hopefully when time will permit, we will do a Skype interview. The young man from Maastricht has won two championships in the past 2 years, the 2010 Formula BMW Europe with Josef Kaufmann Racing, a good friend, and their racing trailer is our office when I'm there, and the 2011 Formula Renault Euro Cup, which was also with Kaufmann Racing. And both wins came in very classic, come-from-behind victories. I mean, halfway through the season, it was like over. But so very good for him. And I just have a very strong feeling that this guy is going to do what Jan Lemmers and Jos Verstappen could not do, and that is win a Formula One race. He's very good talent. Some other quickies. You like a quickie, right?
I love a quickie in the morning.
They're very good. Argentina is off the WTCC calendar. They were going to have a World Touring Car Championship race there. That's not happening. Chevrolet bails out of BTCC, British Touring Car Championship. They want to concentrate on World Touring Car Championship. You know, I've been watching a lot of races. They are showing WTCC, another thing. They have three cars and three very competitive drivers. No love lost between the three. One French, one British, one Swiss. So I'm really enjoying what they've been showing. And they go around the world, so it's interesting to see races from all over the Mondial. The two-legged Rubinho may be at the Brickyard this year, which is very exciting. Casey Stoner was the fastest rider on the second day of preseason MotoGP testing at Sepang, which would be Malaysia or Malaysia. And your homeboy, Alexandre Primat, is going to be racing in Australian V8 this year. So that'll be interesting. I met Alexandre Primat. He was with Team France in A1GP at Laguna Seca.
Our favorite race.
I met him and also Nicolas Lapierre. Alexandre Primat was the poster child of a Francais.
You mean cliche and all that?
Whatever.
A beret, striped shirt, a little mustache, and a baguette?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's so beautiful.
I asked him what part of France. I asked Nicolas Lapierre, what part of France are you from? He says, I'm from Nivers, where the Grand Prix takes place, and that's what he says. So I asked the same question of Alexandre Primat, where are you from? He goes, Paris. I said, okay, but we wish everybody all the best. You know what happened to him, why he's no longer in DTM? What happened, he was involved in a huge accident at Adria in a race last year, and then huge accident, just like Tom Christian's big accident some years ago. And then he wanted to take part in the New York Marathon. And they already, you know, the team doctor advised him not to do that. He did, so Dr. Ulrich said, we fire you with the big butter gun. So you don't want to mess with German management, let me tell you that.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's too bad, but
they lay down the law and the Krupp's machete.
Yep, and what was nice on speed, before the Rolex 24 Hours, they actually had some DTM races on.
Yeah, they've been showing that, and do you
it's
like
the time of year that you get to see
the DTM.
DTM, WTC, BCC, BTCC races.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember being in Florida 1 year and going to lunch. What?
That'll be very nice if they can show it like a few days after the race. So
it'd be nice if they showed them during the seasons instead of,
But
we can get.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we're preaching also when it comes to our Skype interviews. But that's another story for another day. But talking of DTM races, do you like their presenter, the lady Farina Fright or something like that?
Yes, absolutely.
Mighty fine on the eyes. Right?
I text her.
You did? And did she respond? Why don't you become a friend with her on Facebook?
I might just do that.
Yeah.
I'm friends with everybody else.
That's very true. Are you friends with Danica Patrick yet?
Not yet. She won't accept me.
Really? Oh, wow. Okay, some sad news now. Ex-French Grand Prix driver François Migol passed away. He was battling cancer for some time. He was 67 years old and came from the town of Le Mans and raced in the famous 24-hour race there many times. He was on the Le Mans podium three times. Best finish was second in 1976. And I remember, you know, in the early 70s, there were a lot of French drivers. François Migol, Patrick Tambay, Michel Leclerc, and René Arnoux came along. And, you know, every now and then somebody comes in the news, sometimes sad way like this. You know, the guy I wanted to meet very much, he also passed away some years ago, was Johnny Servoz-Gavin, because he was with the first Matra Formula One program. Quite a story there. But then he has also passed away. Another Grand Prix driver also passed away last week. Roberto Mieres came from Mar del Plata in the south of Argentina. He raced Gardini and Maseratis between 1953 and 55. He was 87 years old and has been living in Punta del Este, which is a very nice area of Uruguay. And our condolences to the respective families. And going back to the McLaren new car, I really, really think it's a beautiful car. I like the side pod. The thing that I don't like, some of the things in new cars, I hate that shark fin that, you know, Newey came out with. That's not on this car. So I like it very much. It doesn't have that silly nose drop of Caterham. So I like that. Yeah. So now I'm looking forward to the Ferrari car and other cars, and let the testing begin.
That's fantastic, Nasser. No, tomorrow, I mean next week, many cars come out, and then testing begins. It's going to be great.
Yeah, and the first race is Australia or Bahrain.
It's Australia.
So Bahrain probably won't happen.
I don't think so either. Yeah. It's just politically incorrect.
Yeah, and I think F1-wise, it's also incorrect. You know, what a track in the desert. Well, I mean, you know, you get up 5 in the morning or 4 in the morning, you watch a track in Turkey, beautiful. You watch a track in Suzuka, Melbourne, great venues, great crowd. You know, what do you see there? Desert and 50 Bahraini flags flying. That was the most impressive thing I saw.
Those Bahraini flags can be pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Especially, and then they made the changes to the track, which frankly actually made it worse.
Yeah, and now they have gone back to the older version, which was, it was very dull, then it became even more dull, so they're back to more dull.
Less dull.
Yeah, something like that.
Thank you, Nas. And now, of course, our interview with our F1 Weekly listener.
Well, I'll spare you some grief. I'll say the name, Balraj Thaliwal.
I'm not even going to start.
Yeah,
I'm still working on Keetram.
I know you are. And also, Nico Rosberg.
Is it Rosberg?
Rosberg.
I thought it was Rosebud.
Yeah, oh yeah. Okay, so Mr. Balraj Thaliwal is in Australia, Melbourne. I would like to thank him for his time. We had a long chat. And again, what I always like is how people got interested. What fired their, you know, rocket for motorsport? So this is an interesting story. And he is planning a visit to the Canadian Grand Prix. And I suggested to him to, once his plans are completed, hop on the forum, because our forum is pretty familiar and fan friendly. People do help and give out the information, which is good. And he might even show up in Northern California. So I told him, you know, Mongolian beef and one extra fortune cookie is on F1 Weekly. So please enjoy the conversation with Mr. Balraj Thaliwal.
Okay, so good to see you, sir. What's the latest?
Well, I'm very happy to speak with you. I've been listening to your podcast now, must be at least 3-4 years.
That's good.
I always like your commentary.
Thank you, sir.
You can tell there's a lot of thought and research put into it. And after all, it's a hobby, isn't it? So, yeah, thanks for all the time you put in.
Hello, F1 Weekly Familia. Today we give Skype welcome to one of our own long-time loyal listener, Mr. Balraj Thaliwal. Balraj, welcome to the show. I hope you are having a fair dinkum day in land down under.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, I'm well and very happy to be chatting with you about F1 opinion.
Sure. What part of Australia are you in, please?
I am in Melbourne. Land of the Melbourne Grand Prix.
Absolutely. And you mind me asking, what part of India are you from and how long you've been in Australia?
I am actually from Singapore.
Oh, interesting.
So my parents are from India. I was born in Singapore and brought up there. And I studied in Canada for about 5 years. Then I lived in New Zealand for about 9 years, and now I'm here for the last 7 years.
Did you ever spend some time in the United States?
Yes, I visited a lot of places in the U.S. during my time in Canada. Yeah, I think last count I had visited 28 or 30 out of 50 states.
Great. Well, next time you're in San Francisco Bay Area, please, and we'll do some Chinese or Mongolian beef.
Yes, yes, I'm planning a trip actually to the Montreal Grand Prix this year.
Really?
And that's early June, and then after that I'm hoping to... I've got someone to see in a place called Woodside, California. Is that close by?
Woodside, there is a Woodside not too far from where we are, but sometimes, you know, you may have a city of the same name in another part of California also. If the zip code is starting with 95, then it's in our hood.
Okay. Yeah, so definitely, if there's something there, I'll catch up with you. And I think you guys also try and make it up to the Canadian Grand Prix, don't you?
Oh, well, you know, it's possible. And, you know, hopefully one of us will be there. But, you know, we have quite a few F1 Weekly Familia members who go there from U.S., and also quite a few in O Canada itself. So I don't know what your plan. Are you going with the group, or just you or your family, or just by yourself?
At this stage, I'm not sure. I can probably see it as only myself, because it's not in school holidays, and it's one of the races I've always wanted to go to, and I've got a very good friend who lives in Montreal who I haven't seen for 26 years. And I only spoke to him yesterday, so we're starting the plans.
No, it's a great race, and it's a great town. And the good thing is, you know, it's you can take the subway, and you get off the Jean Drapeau station, and there you are.
Yeah.
And I think my suggestion would be that once you finalize your plan, please put it on the forum. And, you know, our forum is very fan-friendly and familiar-friendly. And I'm sure you'll have a good time. And who knows, I may show up. I have a trip planning overseas in April, so I'm not sure if I can do another one in June, because I also want to go to beautiful Tejas, Texas, as we call it here.
Yes.
We'll see.
Yeah. I just heard news yesterday that the circuit was going to be ready by August.
Yeah, you know, once, if there are no politics and, you know, the usual nonsense is not in a situation, then things happen very fast in America. I'm sure they do in our part of the world also. So I'm not surprised one thing I assure you, if there's no other political issues, they won't be competing the track on race day. As it's happening. Yeah. I mean,
I think the reason why they said August, because they want it to be perfectly clear they'll be ready.
Yeah, so it should be fun. And okay, so let's get your story about Formula One motor racing. How and when did you get interested in this beautiful thing?
Okay, my earliest memory is I was 8 years old, and in the days of black and white TV, I happened to be in someone's house, I think, visiting with my parents. And I saw this McLaren car, Formula One McLaren, you know. It's, I think now if I look back, it must have been the M14A from 1917. And I remember thinking it's the most beautiful car I've ever seen racing. I don't remember the track. I don't remember the driver. But, you know, that was the day I became hooked.
It made an impression on you.
Yeah, and I've been a McLaren fan from that day until now.
Oh, great, that's good. Now, now that you have mentioned McLaren is your team, I'll have some questions later on.
Yeah.
Is there a certain era, you know, interestingly, a lot of people I have met in my life, also through F1 Weekly, it just, maybe it's the trope we are in, that a lot of people that I'm running into started in the early 70s, for me it was 73. Is there a certain era since then that is more appealing to you or has some special fascination for you?
Yes, I would say it's the time that Senna spent at McLaren. You know, when was it? 88, right up till 91, 92. And he won his 3 world championships. I think he won his first race with McLaren as well. No. He won his first race with Lotus, that's right.
Portugal.
All his 3 championships were with McLaren. 88, 90, 91. I remember watching, you know, every single race. At this age, a lot of memories are gone, but, you know, some of these are still there.
Yeah.
But if you look at, the way Ayrton Senna went through his career, you know, in his rookie year, 1984, he came ninth in the Drivers' Championship and scored 13 points. His teammate finished 17th with 3 points. That was Stefan Johansson, you know. And then in the years with Prost, it was pretty close. But, you know, take something like 1989, Senna won 6 races, Prost won 4, but Prost took out the championship by 16 points. You know, more second place finishes. That was pretty exciting, yeah. And I think, had Senna not been killed, I believe that Schumacher would not be a 7-time world champion and be known today as the most successful driver. I think he might be the second. So, you know, it's just speculation.
No, a lot of people say that, and unfortunately, you know, I mean, these other events of life that we just have to deal with. Now, you know, motorsports has a lot of characters and a lot of technology, of course. Now, since you are a passionate McLaren fan, so I'm going to ask you about, we'll talk about McLaren drivers, and we all know what they did. So tell me, let's just say, let's talk about James Hunt. What's your thoughts on him? What do you remember most about him?
James Hunt, I remember basically he's your rebel driver, you know. So he's out there, there's lots of pictures of him smoking, you know, hanging out with women, having a good time. But, I mean, he could drive, you know. And those were the days where if you could drive, that was everything, you know. Now you not only have to drive, you have to bring money, you know, you have to bring sponsors. You know, and you get all this number one, number two politics within the team and stuff like that. So, you know, the old days of racing where it was purely talent-based and racing is, you know, those were nice days. I enjoyed those races.
Yeah. Were you a fan of Emerson Fittipaldi, his second championship game with McLaren?
Yes, yes. And actually, I met him in Singapore. You know, after I told you in 1970 I got hooked on racing, my father had a very good friend in the Singapore Army. He was a colonel. And in those days, Singapore had its Grand Prix. Every year Singapore had a Grand Prix. And the Army was responsible for setting up the stands. You know, the combat engineers would come in and set up the stands and seats and all that. So my father always got a couple of free tickets. So he took me to these races and I really enjoyed them. And I remember we were sitting at a hairpin one year and Emerson Fittipaldi crashed right on that corner. And I can't remember what car he was in, but you know, they cleared the thing out. And then he was standing right beside me. And you know, I was talking to him. I said, "Hi, you know, are you hurt?" And he's a nice guy. So,
yeah, I met him some years ago at Laguna Seca. Very, very nice gentleman. Mm. Okay. Then who else we had? Were you a fan of Watson, John Watson?
There were many years in between where, you know, I wasn't keeping up with every single race. So, you know, the drivers that I remember, and you know, being a McLaren fan, I'm a fan first of the sport and then of the team.
That's,
you know, so you know, I have, you know, Damon Hill, you know, Williams drivers, all of them, you know, I followed Mansell, you know, whether they were with Lotus or Williams, you know. I liked a lot of drivers like Damon Hill, Nigel Mansell, Nelson Piquet, you know, senior, and of course the first race actually I went to was 2003 Grand Prix in Malaysia. And that's where Kimi Raikkonen won his first race with McLaren. So that's a nice memory I have.
Yes.
You know, I was sitting right on turn number 4, sitting on the grass there. And, I was hooked up with a bunch of McLaren family cheering every time he drove around.
Interesting.
So, that was a good memory.
Going back to the Senna years at McLaren, that was an intense rivalry between him and Alain Prost, which, you know, I enjoyed very much. And about cage rattling and serious competition. Whose side were you on?
I was on Senna, of course. You know, I mean, you could see when he drove that this was just not another driver, you know. And I've heard a description once of, like, I don't remember who it was, but somebody was describing Senna racing at Monaco.
Mm-hmm.
And the words he was used was, the car was dancing. You know, so he could make the car do things that no other driver could.
Yeah.
You know, and I think in a lot of Monaco races, he was clear, you know, at least 1 second clear in lap times of many other drivers.
Yeah. Yeah, his qualifying performance was just like unbelievable. Now, 2007 is one of my favorite seasons, and, you know, I've been following this night and day since 1973. And, you know, life is all about cycles, you know. You always have changing of the guard. You know, you see one driver doing well, and then some guy comes and pushes in. And this has happened all the time. Even Niki Lauda wrote in his book, no matter what he did at McLaren, he just could not go faster than he used the F word for Prost, that he was so but the 2000 thing that we had a two-time world champion, completely shocked by a rookie. I mean, I've never seen anything like that. So in that famous battle, Lewis Hamilton versus Nando, whose side were you on?
I was on the side of Hamilton.
Really?
Yeah, the side of Hamilton. Nando, I don't dislike him, and actually over the years I've come to like him more. But there was a time in his career where he wasn't as likable as he is now. I suppose what really changed was his second championship, was it 2006?
Right.
Yeah, his second championship, 2006, when he was giving the press interview, I think that was where my opinion changed, because he sort of felt how much difficulty he had gone through. You know, he actually said the words, not many people in my own country supported me, or something to that effect, you know, and yet he still made it. And I think that was something I thought, yeah, this is a good guy. But 2007, Hamilton came in as a rookie, and then you had the two-time world champion, and they both ended up on exactly the same number of points. That was a joy to watch, and I thought, you know, Hamilton is going to go on and do great things. But unfortunately, you know, he's got stuck in some personal issues. He's got management issues. I mean, from the time he left the management under his father, his performance has just gone down. You know, and to me that shows how important the management is. And now he's managed by an entertainment guy, you know, not a Formula One guy. And Simon Fuller, if you question him about Formula One, you probably wouldn't be able to tell him much.
Yeah. This is a very important point you bring up about management. You know, we saw what happened with Tiger Woods, and we're not going to go into details here. His father was alive, apparently, you know, he was around him and was a very good influence. And also, you know, I was thinking about this Adrian Sutil situation. And, you know, whether it's Alonso, Schumacher, Senna, whatever driver, whether you are a fan or whether you like them or not, you have to look at situation. In this high pressure environment, but everybody has a camera or a phone camera, whatever. When you're a big guy, you have to be very careful. And what has happened is Sutil, now he's going to go in trial in Germany. I just cannot imagine that a Michael Schumacher, Alonso, Ayrton Senna, when he was alive, Alain Prost, they had their own, you know, cronies and bodyguards, that they would never allow any of these people to get into a situation that Sutil got. So it's very important to have right people around you. Now at McLaren, your favorite team, we have two world champions. You mentioned Lewis had some issues. Now, let's say next year he does not have these silly issues. Do you think he can overhaul and do to Button what he did to Kovalainen or Alonso? Or is Button the man at McLaren?
Button is a smart, intelligent character, so he can hold his own against anyone, I believe. But if we have Hamilton from 2007 and 8 this year, then cages can rattle both ways. You know, I'm pretty sure of that, because Hamilton just has to decide what he wants to focus on. And once he makes that decision and sticks to it, I think he can come back to it, you know. But then the other side of it has to be there, you know, the car has to be there.
Sure. Now, what's your prediction? We have not even seen the cars. Do you think the Sebastian Vettel steam roller will continue in 2012, or there will be a faster Ferrari this year?
Well, I hope not. I hope that they all come out pretty competitive, equally competitive, so that, you know, as fans we get to see close racing. But I think that the three will still be up there, you know, Red Bull, McLaren, Ferrari will be up there. Remains to be seen whether Mercedes can come into that group. I'm hoping they can, because they've put a lot of work into getting the right team together. 2009 for Braun was basically left over from what Honda did, so really, you know, it's an anomaly. But I'm hoping Mercedes can come up in there as well, because again, you know, Michael Schumacher, in his early days where he was running people off the road, you know, like Damon Hill and all that, he wasn't a very likable character. But I think towards the end of his career, he became a bit more likable. You know, and I certainly, you know, I'm not a fan of his, but I don't dislike him either. He's just another driver. So I'm hoping that all three will be competitive, and then you can see, you know, some close racing. But, you know, there's some things that are still in the way of good racing. DRS, for example, is a complete waste of time. I don't know why the FIA stick with it. I believe it actually takes away from the racing.
I'm also not a fan of DRS, but, you know, these are the cards you've been handed. Okay, now a question. VX Series in Australia, they have a big race, Bathurst 1000. Have you been there? How do you like that race?
Yeah.
And the track itself, Mount Panorama.
No, I haven't been there. And actually, as much of a fan as I am, can you believe it? I've only been to that one race, 2003 Malaysia. In 2004, I went to Albert Park, but only on the Friday and Saturday. And I always prefer to watch the race at home on TV. You know, so actually Montreal this year will be my second race that I'm attending.
Wow, and both races are outside Australia that you will be have and will be attending. Interesting. Now, of all the Grand Prix tracks, what track do you like most?
I would say it's a tough one between Spa and Monza. I think still Spa will win out. Yeah, that once I finish Montreal, then you know my next target will be to attend a race at Spa.
Yeah, that should be fun. Okay, in your country, Australia, who is more popular, Casey Stoner or Mark Webber?
Yeah, I would say Mark Webber is more popular just because he's more well known. Yeah, Formula One is a much higher profile than MotoGP, and he also does a lot of things. He used to have, I think it was called the Mark Webber Ironman Challenge or something. You know, once a year he used to have a charity race. Yeah, so that made him very popular. And Casey Stoner is still popular, but you know, it's MotoGP is probably not as big as Formula One in Australia.
Now, I keep hearing that the V8 series obviously is very popular. Would the average non-racing fan in Australia know top-line drivers like Craig Lowndes or Mark Scaife or, you know, Garth Sender?
Yes, I think so, because these guys, even if you don't follow it, they're out there, you know, on the TV all the time, whether they're selling toothpaste or soft drinks or whatever. They're in the ads all the time. So you hear about them all the time.
Have you ever been to any V8 race?
Actually, I was going to say no, but I remember in New Zealand once, in Wellington, we used to have the street race once a year. And I actually went to quite a few of those, and that was, they had vintage cars, and one of the series they had was the V8s. And those were the days when Peter Brock was still alive, and I used to enjoy going to those. And it was like, you know, 200 meters walk from my office where I work. And so, you know, from your office you can already hear the cars. And you just find an excuse to leave and walk down there.
Okay, now going back to Formula One, between Romain Grosjean, Charles Pi, Jean-Éric Vergne, and your man Daniel Ricciardo, who do you think will have the most impressive season in 2012?
Okay, let's go back to the cars they're going to be in. You've got Charles Pi is going to be in a Virgin. Ricciardo has got the Toro drive, right?
Right, with Jean-Éric Vergne.
I think it's going to be very close between the two. Has the other Virgin driver been named?
That would be Charles.
Yeah, Charles Pig and Glock. Yeah, that one I don't know. I mean, Glock is very steady. And Charles Pic, I don't know much about. And then the other one was Grosjean is teaming up in.
Oh, that's a classic combo. Him and Raikkonen.
Raikkonen, yeah. So that's going to be a very interesting one. But you know, Renault, I still call them Renault Lotus. If they come up with. If they come out with a competitive car, then I think Raikkonen will leave Grosjean far behind. But then, if they don't have a competitive car, then I think Grosjean will be the leader there. Because Raikkonen, if he doesn't have a competitive car, seems to just be disinterested.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you.
You saw that in, was it 2008?
Yeah, it was, with the, very bad.
Then the test.
That's very true. Mm. Now, final question for you is, I or any of the F1 Weekly Familia members, if we come to Australia, will you throw an extra shrimp on the barbie?
Oh, without any question. Yeah, you're all welcome. As I told you already, you know, if you're planning to come down here, get in touch. You know, there's F1 Familia here, and yeah, no problems at all.
No, we are very pleased. We have quite a few listeners in Australia and New Zealand, and or any message for listeners of Weekly like yourself, here's your opportunity for a shout out. Would you like to say anything to the F1 Weekly family members listening to you?
Yeah, well, if anyone's ever in Australia, do get in touch through yourself with me and meet up and have a yarn about Formula One. If any of you are coming through and need a place to stay, just, you know, reach out to me. We can't always promise you a room or, you know, but a mattress on the floor, no problem at all.
Great.
And, also, I want to say, you know, thank you to not only you, but also Clark and Steve for all the work you do, bringing the podcast. It's a labor of love, you know, and probably you get a lot of emails, you know, that with complaints and stuff, but you probably don't get enough praise for what you do. So this is my thank you to all of you.
Thank you so much. No, we certainly appreciate, and we also look forward to what we call digital slings and arrows, and that has helped us, you know, get the show a little bit better, and hopefully people like yourself will keep enjoying.
Balraj, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Nasser, thanks for an outstanding Motorsports Mondial. And now, we'll just go right into the wrap-up, Nass. Cameron Karting is proud to organize and support the 2012 Redline Oil Karting Championship. Cameron Karting offers CRG karts, engines and parts for all karts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California karters. For more information, just go to CameronKarting.com. The 2012 Motorsports Memories Calendar, one and only, is still available at your disposal. Simply go to the front page of FNWeekly.com and click on the header or the merchandise link. We want to mention our Facebook and Twitter sites, Google+. Just do a search for me and click that you love me. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email me at info@F1Weekly.com. I want to thank everyone who listens to the program. Good night.
Bye.
Good night.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. Thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.